1 week season, fam. Happy Thanksgiving. I am going to do something a little bit different here with an audio version of my DFS interpretation. So in this embedded audio player, there is a little settings, three dots on the right, that you can change the playback speed if you want to play this at 2x speed. So why an audio version instead of typed version? It's kind of an interesting slate to where I'm being able to pin down my thoughts a little bit more clearly by talking through them as opposed to typing them out. So since you already have a written DFS interpretation from Hilo, I am going to chip in with an audio DFS interpretations to hopefully allow me to more fully explore the way that I see this slate. So from a starting point, how I'm seeing this slate for myself. So I hit on this in the Oracle for Inner Circle members, but I'll also kind of cover the broader view of this here is we should be tailoring our play to our strengths. So for me, I typically play the $1,500 game changer on the Thanksgiving slate, which is about a third of my typical, like 40% to 30% of my typical buy-in for the main slate. That is because I don't play a lot of short slates. My only nights off during football season are Sunday night and Monday night, so I use those nights to recharge. I rarely play showdowns. Because of that, I'm also not playing the Monday to Thursday slates. And then Thursdays for me are NFL edge from wake up to bedtime. And so I don't get a chance to play the Thursday night showdown. So I don't have a ton of short slate experience. The extent of my short slate experience is basically the Thanksgiving slate. And while I play that every year, that's still only, what, 8 or 9 or 10 slates of experience that I have in these 2 or 3 game slates. On the flip side, if you have a lot of short slate experience, or if you are seeing a lot of personal edges on this slate, then you can attack this slate a little bit more heavily. So I say that to say, get some action in play, but also tailor your action to where you are feeling your edge is and what extent you see that edge being. Secondly, one of the things that I'm seeing so far, and this could change Wednesday night as I get into my final roster construction, but one of the things that I'm seeing on this slate is that I'm not being able to get quite down to a single entry build that I like. And the reason for that is because I think that the cheap wide receivers are going to be one of the edges, but there's no real clear way to know which cheap wide receiver is going to be the guy to go to. And so because of that, I'm thinking that instead of playing the 1500 game changer, I might just play one of the power sweeps, which is, well, they're naming them differently on the Thanksgiving slate, but the power sweep, which is the $150 three max contest, and play one of those. So $450 in play instead of my typical $1,500 in play. And basically say, okay, I see an edge. I think that I have an edge if I'm putting in three rosters into a three max contest, but I'm not seeing a big enough edge that I want to get my typical full Thanksgiving allocation in play. And again, this is specific to the way that I play. I've always played the Thanksgiving slate, but I always play a contest with under 1,000 entries. So I don't have a lot of experience on short slates, large field play. And so that's not where I'm going to attack this week. And in the typical small field play single entry that I do, I'm not seeing my typical edge quite yet. And so I might steer clear of that and play something differently. So I say that to say, tailor your play this week to where you are seeing your edges. Next thing that I want to talk about here is from a strategy perspective. We talk about this a lot in Inner Circle, but there is a tendency among the field to try to avoid chalk, right? To think that this is how we play sharp DFS. And the reality is that on these weeks when chalk hits and everyone's like, oh, chalk's hitting more often, we should still be saying, oh, that's fine by us because we were on that chalk. It was sharp chalk. When there is sharp chalk, when it's anti-fragile chalk, that is chalk that we want to be willing to ride up the field with, especially in, now a lot of this is through the lens of smaller field contests, which is how I play these smaller slates each year. But we want to be willing to play that anti-fragile chalk and then look for ways to exploit the more fragile chalk. So from that standpoint, let's take a look at what the anti-fragile chalk is on this slate. Well, the Bills are implied to score over 32 points against the Lions. The only other team implied to score more than like 23 points is the Cowboys, but then we also know that the field misperceives this Cowboys offense. The field thinks of this as an offense that's going to attack and put up a bunch of points, whereas realistically, if the Cowboys score 28 plus points, it's probably going to be from a lot of sustained drives, and efficiency, right? And the clock is being bled out, and then the Cowboys are scoring at the ends of those drives. It's not going to be from them going up tempo and attacking the Giants through the air and just trying to pepper the scoreboard with points. It's going to be from the Cowboys trying to control this game from in front. And so as Hilo kind of laid out in the NFL Edge, the chances of the Cowboys ascending well above their implied team total is a lot lower than the chances of the Bills going well above their implied team total. And that's not to say that it can't happen. And if we were on a slate where the Cowboys were coming in with low ownership, if everybody were OWS users and everybody saw the Cowboys the way that we see them, then it might be like, hey, everybody's on the Bills, nobody's on the Cowboys. And we could say, yeah, but let's look at this Bears game, right? The Cowboys-Bears game where the Cowboys, yeah, they still played their typical way, but they finished every drive in a touchdown. No field goals in that game. 49 points scored, 7 touchdowns scored. And what if they end up with a game like that? Sure, the Giants are one of the best red zone defenses in the NFL. It's unlikely to happen, but what if it does happen, right? And then we could kind of pivot by going there. But realistically, sure, we're going to see higher ownership on Josh Allen than on Dak Prescott. We're going to see higher ownership on the Bills passing attack than on the Cowboys passing attack, but we're still going to see a lot of ownership on the Cowboys passing attack. And so for me, especially in smaller field play, what I'm going to be looking to do is say, okay, the most certainty is in this Bills game. It's highly unlikely that the Giants blow up for a huge game against the Cowboys' number one defense. It's highly unlikely that the Vikings, without Christian Darrisaw, playing against the Patriots, second best pass rush in the NFL, second highest pressure rate in the NFL, that the Vikings are going to blow up for a monster game. It's highly unlikely that Mac Jones and the Patriots blow up for a monster game unless being somehow forced to by the Vikings. And so that brings us back to this Bills and Lions game. So my rosters are going to heavily account for this Bills and Lions game. Couple things that I will be looking at. Gabe Davis is very interesting. Stephon Diggs is very interesting. Hilo laid out the numbers of Stephon Diggs' snap rates. But one thing that I also want to highlight is that Stephon Diggs has more fantasy points, more DraftKings points per game than Justin Jefferson. Stephon Diggs, whether he's on the field or not, is still an extreme focal point of this offense. And this is pretty wild. While Stephon Diggs has derived a lot of his upside from touchdowns, 8 touchdowns on the year, let's go through, we'll take away his duds, and let's go through what his pre-touchdown fantasy scoring has been in his, 7 solid games this year. Pre-touchdown fantasy scoring, 23.2, 29.8. This is going from week 1 and moving forward. So 23.2, 29.8 DraftKings points before touchdowns in week 2, 21.2 in week 5, 27.8 in week 6, 19.8 in week 8, 27.8 in week 10. So we take out his 4 disappointing games, and in his other 6 games, he has had monster scores even before the touchdowns, and then the touchdowns are what pushes him up to, you know, where his price is and what we're really looking for from him. But Stephon Diggs, in all these big games, he wouldn't have even killed you if he scored no touchdowns, especially on a smaller slate like this. So Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, Gabe Davis, guys that I'm looking to, Dawson Knox, a guy that I'm looking to on this slate, and then bringbacks from the Lions. So where can we get funky with bringbacks from the Lions? Well, obviously, Amon-Ra St. Brown is the best play on the Lions. And then obviously there are a lot of question marks with wide receiver behind Amon-Ra St. Brown. So one place where we can potentially find an edge is pay attention to news on Thanksgiving morning, where a lot of people might already have their roster set. They've got family stuff going on. But what if we get news that DJ Shark is going to play more snaps? We know that he can put up 20 to 30 points. He's one of these rare, lower-priced, lower-owned guys on a slate like this who can actually put up 20 to 30 points. Or if Josh Reynolds is playing, if DJ Shark is going to be still limited, Josh Reynolds can put up a bigger game. He has only put up his bigger games this year when Amon-Ra St. Brown was out or getting hurt or limited, but he's still capable of putting up a nice game. And we know that Khalif Raymond can put up a 20-pointer if these other two guys are less involved. Another place that we can find an edge on the Lions, so we can look at this DeAndre Swift thing and say, well, sure, he's not getting the snaps, he's not getting the workload, and so that's going to continue happening. And realistically, it probably will continue happening this week. But also, what if last week when DeAndre Swift was practicing in full for the first time since week 1 and then still saw a lower snap rate, what if that was a function of the Lions absolutely controlling that game and basically saying, hey, look, we're going to win this game. We don't need to waste DeAndre Swift here, and we have another game in 4 days. Let's save DeAndre Swift for that game. The Lions are 4-6. We might think of them as a team that's out of the playoff hunt, but that is not how they are seeing themselves. They are still seeing themselves as, if we win this game, we're 5-6, and we are right in the thick of things right now. So I don't think that it's totally unrealistic that DeAndre Swift is one of, you know, every year on Thanksgiving, we have these guys who kind of pop with these surprise big games, lower owned, people are not on them. It's like one or two guys every year on Thanksgiving. It would not shock me if DeAndre Swift is that guy this week. I will be considering him on my 3-max build in my smaller field play this week. And that's one of the reasons why I'm thinking about 3-max instead of single entry, because like I probably do want to get DeAndre Swift on one out of my 3 rosters, but probably don't want to pull the trigger on a high dollar single entry build with DeAndre Swift. And that's not to say that you can't, but it is to say that typically when I'm playing that 1500 game changer, it's on the main slate, and I'm able to find much sharper, more bankable ways to be different and grab that extra upside. And so why take that risk on somebody like DeAndre Swift, while also recognizing that DeAndre Swift could end up being a guy that we have to account for on the slate. So that's another thing that kind of pushes me toward this 3-max play this week and kind of leaning in that direction at the moment. Also, Jamal Williams, we know he's never going to get more than 4x his salary because he doesn't get yards, he doesn't get catches, but he can back into these touchdowns. So another guy who we can consider as a bring back on the Lions side. And basically this Lions side becomes very interesting, as in how do you play this Lions side? We can also recognize the Lions have the same implied team total as the Giants, but that Cowboys-Giants game could play to a much lower score than people are expecting. If that game environment as a whole disappoints, well, now it becomes very viable to play 3 Bills and 2 Lions and just say, hey, maybe this is the one game, right? The Patriots and Vikings game, it could score in its 20-20 type range that Vegas has it implied at, but it could also score in like a 10-3 game, right? And then if the Cowboys versus Giants is like 24-16 and Bills and Lions ends up with something like a 38-31 game, which is very possible in a Lions versus Bills type of game, well, then this becomes this one game that you literally just had to build heavily around. So that's something that I want to consider on this slate as well. Moving on to the next game, the Cowboys passing attack is one that I will be largely off of in smaller field play. As always, that's not saying you should be off this game as well, but we understand that the field misperceives this Cowboys offense. We know that Dak Prescott has had, I believe it's 27 or fewer pass attempts in all but one of his games this year. We know that CeeDee Lamb has been at like 8 or fewer targets in all but one of his games with Dak this year. We know how this team wants to win. And then we also know that, hey, Ezekiel Elliott last week saw limited snaps and saw fewer touches, and Tony Pollard saw 21 total touches in that game. But it shouldn't surprise us if Pollard is back down to 14, 15, 16 touches. And even if he gets 20 touches, how often do we see really good running backs get 20 touches and not blow up for a monster game? Tony Pollard could easily, right? Zeke is the guy who's going to get the touches inside the 5-yard line. So if Pollard is not scoring long touchdowns, he could end up with 14 points, 16 points, something like that, and really underwhelm on this slate. So I like Pollard, but he's also one of these key decision points where he's a little bit more fragile than the field is perceiving him as. CeeDee Lamb is a lot more fragile than the field is perceiving him as. Fragile does not mean these guys cannot hit. It just means that their chances of hitting are lower than the field assumes, lower than what ownership will say, and that they can miss harder than the field is assuming. So that kind of points me toward, you know, obviously considering Tony Pollard in this spot, probably not, you know, with 3-max being the way that I'm approaching things, probably not playing Dak myself, probably not, definitely not playing CeeDee Lamb myself. I will have interest in Dalton Schultz. One of the things that, let's pivot over to a positional thought real quickly. One of the things that's interesting to me at the tight end position is Hockenson, Schultz, Knox. Knox is kind of a tier below those other two, but Hockenson and Schultz are really, they're in the top four of fantasy tight ends in the league right now. You could throw Njoku in that mix as well, but we've got Mark Andrews and Travis Kelce at the top, and then Hockenson and Schultz and Njoku kind of in the level below that. And we should remember that Dalton Schultz was the number 3 fantasy tight end just last season with Dak Prescott under center all year. We should keep in mind that that has continued to be the case when Dak has been the quarterback this season. Dalton Schultz has been a focal point. He has plenty of upside in this offense. And so in terms of going off the board at tight end, one thing I want to think about is, hey, these off the board tight ends not only have to hit, but they need these other guys to fail, and these other guys have pretty large bankable roles. It's tough for all of them to fail. So tight end Schultz and Hawkinson and Knox are kind of the guys that I'm primarily going to be considering on my builds this week. And then again, looking for other places to be different. I kind of see these guys. It's like when we had the week with six chalky running backs who were all really good plays. And it's like, if you go away from these guys, you need all of them to fail in order for, and you need your lower likelihood guy to hit in order for you to gain an edge on the field. So tight end's a place where I'm probably not trying to get too funky. And then over on the Giants side of this game, this is another spot where we have an opportunity to find some upside at low ownership. So we know that Saquon Barkley is extremely overpriced for his likeliest range of outcomes here, although, and he'll probably be somewhat popular, but still an interesting piece to consider because we know he can hit for a monster game. So keep him in mind. And then Darius Slayton, we know that Darius Slayton is the primary target for the Giants. It's a little bit scary to rely on Daniel Jones, but because it's a little bit scary to rely on Daniel Jones, people don't want to do it. People don't want to pull the trigger on this play. Okay, well, starting from week 7, Darius Slayton has 14.8 DraftKings points, 11.6, 18.5, 13.6. The 18.5 was with a touchdown. The other scores were without a touchdown. So if we added the touchdown to any of those other scores, they become 20.8, 17.6, 19.6. So basically, if Darius Slayton scores a touchdown with the role that he has had, he's hitting about 4x his multiplier. And we know that he's capable of a bigger game than that. In fact, 86 yards last week, so 14 yards shy of that 100-yard bonus. 95 yards the week before, 5 yards shy of that 100-yard bonus. And that 95 yards was 3 catches on 4 targets against Houston, a team that, as we know, faces the lowest opponent pass play rate in the league. But we would expect this week that the Giants will eventually have to pass the ball a little bit more, and that opens up opportunities for Darius Slayton to have a 100-yard and a touchdown type of game. So he becomes very interesting on this slate as a guy who we know ownership is going to be relatively low on him because people do not want to play this guy who was the number 5 wide receiver to start the season and is relying on Daniel Jones. But we also can look back a couple of years ago and say Darius Slayton was pretty consistent, whatever it was, 3 years ago when he had a real role in this offense. He was a guy who we were drafting heavily in best ball the next year saying, man, this guy has a lot of upside. He has good rapport with Daniel Jones. So he becomes very interesting on a slate like this as an alpha receiver with a real role and plenty of upside who people just don't want to play him, right? So that becomes one of these places where we don't have to take a bad play in order to be different. We have to take a play that feels uncomfortable, but it doesn't mean that it's a bad play. And so there's plenty of upside on Darius Slayton. He's a guy that I will be considering. And then we have question marks on the other Giants pass catchers. And then we also have to question, how likely are these guys to put up a meaningful score, right? The Isaiah Hodgins and Marcus Johnsons and these types of guys, right? So they're interesting guys to consider. I will be considering them because I'm going to have probably a cheap wide receiver on my builds to try to capture one of these low-owned, high-upside, cheap wideouts who can hit for a nice game. But at the same time, we have to say, if one of these guys hits, are they really hitting for 20 points, right? Or are they hitting and they're getting you a cheap, low-owned 8 points, 11 points, 12 points that really doesn't help you win a tournament? So that's kind of the rest of the Giants' offense. And then we have this last game, which, as I noted, could legitimately be just a super low-scoring game. It could also be, and this is not just recency bias with the Vikings getting blown out, it could legitimately be like a 17-6 Patriots win. It could be a game in which the Vikings have a hard time getting anything going. The Patriots control the time of possession. The Patriots are able to finish off some drives against this Vikings defense, and the Vikings don't really produce anything worth having. This is the Patriots are on track to allow the fewest or second fewest running back rushing touchdowns for the 6th time in the last 7 years. We've talked about this ever since OWS started. Analytically, it is much easier to score on the ground once you get close to the end zone. And so the Patriots shift their defense to basically force opponents to score through the air when they get close to the end zone. They've been doing this for over half a decade and making it very difficult on opponents to score on the ground. So that takes Dalvin Cook out of consideration for me unless his ownership goes really low in this spot. Again, not saying don't play this guy, obviously a guy who can hit, just kind of giving my DFS interpretations for this slate.